Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today with Fred Schenkelberg. Fred, how are you doing?
Hey, good. Got my coffee. I'm set.
All right, good. Something interesting, and I think we've talked about it a few times, is reliability education for non-reliability engineers. And I've seen, and you know, us both being consultants, we have probably seen different approaches from customers who want to implement reliability tools. What have been your experience when you advise that they do some education in advance to having either you or the team start to use tools?
It's been mixed. If the presenting problem, if the objective of the consulting agreement or the project is to improve the reliability program and culture over time, mm-hmm. then training is usually pretty much assumed that that's going to occur. Yep. And then it's a matter of, well, how are we going to do this? Is it a broad brush? Let's do a classroom style and get the big picture and some of the basics of tools. Or are we doing more of a workshop kind of approach or more small teams type thing? The actual implementation of the education may take different forms, but it's usually based on the notion that they want to have a systemic change. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if they don't want me as the consultant there all the time to do every one of their accelerated life tests, for example, then they'll spend a little bit more time so that we can teach how to do accelerated life testing to a handful of folks so that the next time they're more likely to be able to do it themselves, as opposed to a consulting agreement where they're just saying, I need a pair of hands. Can you design this test for me? That's great. Thanks. See you later.
Right. And there's so many tools that I find that, you know, it's in collaboration, right? Very rarely do I go in and do execute a reliability tool where I'm not engaged with the design team, because such a big part of the deliverable of these tools is improving the design and creating design input. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to see the difference between engineers of other disciplines who are engaged on this, who are curious of the reliability tool and how it works, and then our collaboration is so much more effective, versus the people who still believe in the throw it over the wall, like, tell me what you need, here's the information, come back later. And I've always found that when organizations are open to letting people take some time, even a few hours, even a half day class, mm-hmm. in advance of these tools, it's such a different difference with regard to how effective the tools get implemented, because people understand how and why they're being used, which then allows them to receive that input, that design input from it, so much more cleanly.
Yeah, definitely agree. Part of it is we also come in with a set of terms and techniques and like reliability modeling, for example. Mm. The basic concept's not hard to understand. It's how do I use it? As an electrical engineer working with suppliers, why do I need a system model? Mm-hmm, how does that affect what I do? And just sometimes we're teaching it on the spot. This is why this is important, and here's how we use it. And other times it's a more formal training. And I think some of that also deals with how's that organization typically approach problems. Mm. You know, if there's a strong, we provide education, we have classroom set up, we have internal university program, you know, HP had a HP University that had a whole catalog of different courses and training options and tracks for different professions. There was a real culture that's what you did. You went and got training on a regular basis. Where some organizations, you know, I've asked a couple of times, and they said, you know, I don't remember the last time we even had the option to go to a conference. We don't get training. That's on your own time.
You know, right.
I had their managers say, we hire people that don't need training.
Yeah, Yeah, right. And but they may be good at that moment, but they're not going to progress.
That's right.
You know, it's funny. You actually said something that reminded me of something that I was once quoted as saying, and they were like, "This should be on a poster."
Yeah.
I said, it was really funny. I didn't realize I was just speaking. And I said, language is one of the greatest tragedies of reliability.
I got to capture that.
That's a poster right there. And what I meant was that so much good information gets lost in incorrect or language or people having different definitions or people not understanding what's being said. And that's another thing that education can really have a big impact, because even for people who aren't going to be participating in the use of the tools, if they are simply going to, you know, see some summary at the end, or from a management standpoint, you know, get to have a presentation of what occurred and how it helped, if they aren't familiar with the terms or the language, or worse off, have their own definitions that are separate, the communication, which then affects the implementation of the results, is very different. Mm-hmm. And I see so much good reliability work get lost in language and differences in definitions. And it's one of the greatest tragedies of reliability is language.
Oh, it is. I mean, simple terms like failure rate. If I say it has a X failure rate, but you interpret that to mean over the lifetime of the product, when it's actually over the life of an hour of the product, we're not talking the same language, even though we're nodding our heads and smiling and going, yeah, failure rate's net got to go down.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story before, is I went down and asked three different people in a development team what the reliability goal was. And they all knew it verbatim. And they all had different implementation strategies. One was, that's impossible, so we're not going to bother. Another said, well, it's a tough goal, so I gold plate everything, make sure everything's perfect and do a lot of due diligence. And my favorite was the manager who said, well, we don't measure it, so I don't pay any attention to it.
Right, right. Right. Yeah. Right. So what if all those people spend about 4 hours, you know, having a chance to even just share what their perspective is, and then I'm sure a discussion would come out of it of, well, I don't know if that's the way I would do it, or this or that. Even at just after that half day, they would come away being much closer in what they think things mean and what they're trying to achieve.
And you know, it reminds me of the process mapping, and even the process of becoming an ISO certified facility oftentimes means, well, what are our processes? What are our procedures? How do we do stuff? If you've ever been involved with a product lifecycle document creation, mm-hmm. you know, get four or five, you know, program managers and engineering directors together and ask them, how do you create a product? How do you design a product? What are the major milestones that you need to review at your various stage gates? That's a 3-day retreat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's not trivial. And I think we run into that with reliability quite a bit. Is part of it is the curse of being too familiar with it. We've got education. We read the books. We study it. We read the papers. We go to the conferences. The rest of our team doesn't. And so the electrical engineers, mechanical, software folks that we work with, reliability could be nothing more than you're going to show up on the meeting all the time. That's, you're reliable.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. And yeah, and the thing is too, is if you look at it with the program process, you see the closed loop part of these tools as well. Because if people don't understand the tools and why they're used and how they're, you know, effective, things like, you know, design failure modes effects analysis is something that they want to get done and, you know, check mark it off, put it in the filing cabinet. Mm-hmm. But if they really understand the value of it, they will realize and be open to the fact that after you've done the DFMEA and you've let it drive certain other activities, testing or design initiatives, when those are done, going back and feeding those back into the DFMEA and again, updating it and seeing what it drives. And through an understanding of why it was chosen to be used, they're much more open to it. You're getting a lot of additional benefit out of the same exercise that you did because you're keeping it as a closed loop part of the process. So mm-hmm. again, that education, as you just said, will help them understand how, you know, how it fits into the process.
Well, I think it fits. I mean, part of it is that what are the common terms and definitions? Part of it is the how does it fit into the overall process. Part of it is how does this tool, like the FMEA example, help me, right? So an electrical engineer that goes to an FMEA and is focused on one particular issue that's going to destroy the product suddenly learns that, well, the mechanical engineering team has a much more serious problem. I need to give up resources and focus. And you know, understanding the bigger picture, some of that comes from training. Some of it's the experience just in the program. But the training also goes after that, especially when it's a classroom training, that this is a direction we want to go to as a group. It provides that group experience of and common set of norms about approaching reliability. So it's not just the reliability engineer does this and shows up at meetings and tells us stuff. The training itself says, well, here's how to interpret that. You just mentioned that, but also how it affects me in the big picture parts. But more importantly, when the training is done well, it's what do you need to do as the design engineer? What's my role? What questions do I need to ask in order for these tools to be implemented well? It's not an abdication of reliability to the reliability team or to the consultant. Training often, at least in my experience, has been, and this is what you do. This is how reliability fits into your job.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, the other thing too is I've also found too, and I tell them, I'm like, they're not the only ones learning. I'm learning about them. I'm learning about their tools and their process. And it actually can change what I advocate we should do and mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. we should implement it or what order we implement it. Because as those three people, you know, as you described, have different definitions of failure rate or other, you know, characteristics or metrics. None of them may be wrong. They're just different. Mm-hmm. So as they're coming together and talking about it as a group, you know, the reliability person, if they're outside the organization or inside, is another person in that conversation. And the four of them are talking about it and hashing out how they do want to approach it. You know, and they have a lot of motivation to get that hashed out, especially when they realize that they're coming from different directions, which they may have not previously. So just that coordination and share of knowledge, you know, is a really big deal.
It is. Have you ever heard of the term a violent agreement?
Yeah.
Every now and then, especially as the reliability person, if the discussion is heated around implementing something that deals with reliability of the product, you may well need to just disengage a little bit and listen to what they're saying, because the electrical engineer, the mechanical engineer, the supplier, the operations people all may be saying pretty much the same thing, but just different language, different focuses, and get pretty heated about it and assuming the other person's an idiot because they can't understand and back and forth and just step back. Oftentimes we get some of these emotional discussions and we're actually really in agreement. We just can't hear each other. Mm-hmm. So yeah, sometimes we play the role of the marriage counselor. It's kind of
yes, yeah, definitely. It definitely felt that way sometimes.
Yeah. So we've gone from training to marriage counseling somehow in this episode. So.
Whatever it takes, Fred. Whatever it takes.
Well, you know, it's. I think you're very very astute there, because sometimes we're doing training on the spot and being able to explain, whether it's FMEA or HALT or any of the other tools and techniques you're doing, sometimes it also takes, a step check of, all right, here's a Weibull curve of our field data analysis. Does everybody understand how to read this, you know, in a meeting? And if you're getting deer in the headlight and disengagement, right? You know, Bill, you know, you're looking at a change of failure rate of 0.5% on this product line. Here's how this will affect the performance at 1 year, at 2 years, and so on. That's how you read this. You know. And I remember that discussion, and Bill looked at me like, oh, that's what that graph means.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think without a doubt, we have very clearly stated that the return on investment of even a short education course, or even doesn't even have to be an education course, but people taking time to sit down and share their perspectives can yield a great deal more from these activities that you're planning on doing. So why not get more from what you're doing? So yeah, even if people won't do an education course, I think it's great for them to take time in the team to discuss, you know, these topics. So,
and it's I found that it's been hard to quantify, like in a, for an organization that you, and I'm sure you've seen this, is where a bit of education, even a half day or a 2-hour seminar, would really serve them well. It would clear up confusion. It would streamline implementation. It would get rid of some of the cross-fighting and competing that's not really necessary. Well, how do you put a value on that? You know, I'm going to spend $5,000 on a training package and put 10 of your engineers in a room for an afternoon. That's not cheap. How am I going to get $50,000 ROI benefit out of that?
Sure. I mean, that's just a matter of if, well, one approach is people believe in it. And, you know, the upper management from their experience has seen the cost of not doing that. Mm-hmm. I think pretty much you'd have to either be able to show an example, or they will have had to experience where they've had something, a program not go as planned. And when they tried the root cause, what happened, they realized, wow, it's just simply was a matter. A big part of it was these teams weren't in sync with each other. These teams couldn't communicate with each other. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I think it kind of comes down to somebody either having had that experience, or you're able to point it out, or, you know, show them an example. And it's hard to put exact dollar value, but if they're taking the time to analyze a previous program that happened on, they obviously was an expense to it. And they probably are able to easily imagine that expense being much more than whatever the investment is in the half day or day.
Right. I've gotten it down to the, you know, come out of a meeting and I recognize the need for education. I talked to the director of quality. And I says, you know, a seminar would shorten your quality meetings by half. You know, you spend so much time looping and backtracking and reanalyzing material that I think it's, they don't understand what these things are and how they fit into the big picture. Let's do a seminar just on that. But the benefit is let's end the frustration in your meeting. And he was like, oh, I'll sign up for that.
Exactly. He gets the value. He probably can't put a dollar value to it either, but he has a pretty good idea of how much it slowed down the progression of projects. So that was good. Well, Fred, I'm really glad we talked about it. I think it's something that is important. And even simply pointing it out, a lot of people may be able to, you know, do as we just said. They look back and they're like, yeah, I can see how we've had issues in the past on it. So great. Cool. Well, good. Well, everybody listening, if you have any stories to share or any feedback, we'd love to hear it. And we look forward to doing our next episode and having you join. Thanks very much, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.